I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.
Cutting the Curd has been brought to you by Academy Opus Cassius. The Academy Opus Cassius is the cheese industry's unique center for professional development, offering both practical and classroom training in the heart of France. For more information, visit academy-mons.com. That's academy-mons.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby. You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby. You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby, broadcast live to the cosmos on the Heritage Radio Network.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Ann Saxelby, and today we are actually going to do the first of a series that I've been thinking about for a really long time, which is a cheesemonger series, where we're just going to talk to cheesemongers about being cheesemongers. And so my good buddy, Greg Blaze, is here with me. Hello, Greg.
How are you?
I'm fantastic. How are you?
Very well.
Nice. And so, you know, Greg and I have known each other for a long time. We were just talking about it. Greg had a little stand in the Essex Street Market when I opened my store there almost 7 years ago now, selling Comté. Not just Comté, but the best Comté you're going to find in New York City, right?
Pretty good.
Yeah.
That was the best I ever had.
It was awesome. It was awesome. But it was a bit of an uphill battle, that little store, right? I mean,
it was tough in there. I mean, yeah, it was real tough.
If you visit the Essex Market today, you'll see it's like the size. There's a cookie place there now. It's the size of a phone booth. And Greg was like, you know, hawking this cheese to just, you know, anybody who would walk by.
I still had them build a table that I could sleep underneath.
Yeah.
Due to lack of customers.
Oh, that's so funny. I love it. Well, so, Greg, you've been a cheesemonger longer than I have. How the hell did you find yourself mongering, and what's the trajectory? Where'd you start?
My trajectory?
Yeah.
I started in Boston in 95.
Okay.
And
at Formaggio?
No, I never worked for Formaggio Kitchen. I worked for Savinor's.
Okay.
I was going to school at Emerson College, and I ran into a lady who told me, "You're going to be a cheese expert." And I was like, "Well, shit, that's better than being a journalist." So I started then.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So you were at Savinor's for how long? A couple years? Or
I worked there for a few years until I graduated, and then I moved to New York City straight away after I graduated.
Yeah, and then you worked with Giorgio De Luca, right?
I did. I went to work for Balducci's initially when I moved to New York City.
Mm.
For about like $12 an hour, I think they were shocked that someone would travel to New York City and find their corporate office in Long Island City to ask them, you know, "Can I sell cheese for you?" And they were like, "Well, yeah." You know?
Yeah.
I was like, "Well, I have this college degree." They were like, "Well, we don't care about that." And then a friend of mine that I went to school with, her little sister worked at Dean and DeLuca. And when I realized that Balducci's was an insane place to work, full of insane people, I went down to Dean and DeLuca. And
was that full of fewer insane people? Or
no, more. More, more.
Bigger store, more insane people.
But I met, yeah, I did. I met Giorgio, and he looked at me. I had a long hair and some flip flops on, and he's like, sized me up, and, like, called me a hippie or something weird like that. And I just started working with them, and never really looked back after that.
So, I mean, you're ahead of your time, my friend, because now I feel like a lot of people are cheesemongers, and there's the Good Food Jobs website where people you know, log on and find, you know, probably 10 postings a day looking for cheesemongers.
I had no help. I had no one like me doing what I was doing.
And you had the job of a cheesemonger at that point was a different kind of job. It was just kind of like, I mean, you got hired at a grocery store and they'd stick you behind a cheese counter, right? And so you were like a grocery store employee that happened to be working behind the cheese counter. Was it not like that?
Not for me. No.
Well, not for you. No, but I mean, in general, like when you were working at Balducci's, were any of your compatriots passionate about cheese or?
Yeah. And then I stole them from that job and hired them to work for me.
That's great.
No, I mean, in the beginning, when people like myself and you started to do this, there was no support system set up. You had to be a pioneer. You had to sort of range out on your own and do your thing. And
so who did you learn from? I mean, now, you know, you can go to Murray's and get a job and, like, you know, kind of learn from whoever, you know, is running the cheese counter. But who were your go-to people?
People who are dead now, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I had no, I really had no teachers except for myself and the folks that employed me, you know. You had to teach yourself how to do your job. But that was the best part about it.
Yeah.
You never want to be a part of anything that gives you too many rules. So you made up the rules and you sold good stuff. That was what it was about. But it was hard to learn.
Yeah.
It was hard to learn back in the days.
Now, were there, like, I don't know, would you, like, have been a person who was a devotee of Steve Jenkins' book? Or?
Absolutely. That's remains the best book I've ever read in regards to cheese, because that's the one from which they all came, you know?
Yeah, the cheese primer. Or do you say primer? I always say primer.
I always say primer.
Yeah, I'm from the Midwest.
I don't know how to pronounce these things.
Yeah. No, but I like what you said about the beginning and there being no rules. I'm kind of a firm believer that, like, well, not a firm believer maybe, but things are definitely always better and more exciting at the beginning before
always.
They get too bogged down with crap, you
when
know?
You're in on the ground floor of anything that you know is going to be large, that's the best place to be, because you make the rules, you know?
I feel like this place, Roberta's, is a lot like that, too. We're sitting in this shipping container, broadcasting from a shipping container because, you know, Patrick Martins, who also, you know, also happens to be my husband, but he met these guys when they first started the restaurant, and he was like, hey, guys, can I put a shipping container in the backyard? And they were like, well, shit, we just have this ugly auto body shop that we turned into a pizza restaurant. Yeah, absolutely. And then how it's grown from there, you know, it's like those are golden times in the beginning.
Well, it's always best then. I mean, for myself, you know, I've never been here before.
Oh.
And when I walked in, you know, this morning, and in a state of disrepair, obviously, I was like, wow, what a great place. And, you know.
And you're surrounded by friends, too. You actually knew people here.
Yeah, well, they knew me because I'm infamous and notorious in my dealings. But yeah, it's absolutely the best to be. You got to be in, well, for me, yeah, it's the best to be in early.
Yeah
because that's your I'm never good at following rules, but I'm good at, I guess, doing, you know, doing and
creating your own system. So now you're at Eataly.
I am.
So you're, what are you, like, what's your title? Are you like the head cheese buyer? Or are you just like, don't fuck with Greg, basically?
I'm known by many titles. Yeah, I purchase a lot of their cheeses, actually all of them. I work with their head buyer, Dino Bori, who is one of the the children of the slow food movement, you know, so we're bound to that. Those guys and I have a healthy amount of respect for one another, so I buy and sell all the cheese there.
Which is a tremendous amount of cheese.
It's a lot.
I mean, so how much cheese are we talking about? I mean, roughly, coming in and out of that store each week.
Oh, man, if I stopped to think of it.
It would probably be too terrifying.
Yeah, I'd have a seizure, man. Yeah. I would. I mean, we have, when my guy who does my inventory, because I need like 50 secretaries to like keep my head straight, we looked at all of our item codes. We looked at everything we had, and we had about 400 or 500 codes.
Wow.
400 or 500 item codes. And that's in 3 years. So we put a lot of cheese in there quick. But you know, that's what we do. We'll move and tonnage. I mean, oh my goodness, several hundred to thousand pounds a week
that's
of everything.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. And the cheese selection there runs the gamut from, you know, really basic, you know, sort of standards,
yeah,
standbys to just really weird stuff like that ricotta pasita.
Yeah.
That you gave me a taste of the other day.
Yeah. Well, what I learned when I took the job is that in Italy is such a cradle of food, you know, in general. So the things I thought I knew about cheese, I didn't. And now I have to run a stand in an area that produces fresh mozzarella. And, you know, you get to see, like, curd, you know, like the building blocks of everything we sell. And Parmigiano and ricotta, like these things that I think a lot of cheese professionals may take for granted, like fresh cheeses and things that are, you know, they pass in and out of your scope really quickly, you know. Mm-hmm. And ricotta is made and sold and eaten and shat out in like a week. Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
But, you know, cheese has become very precious. So, you know, we hold on to items for 6 months, 8 months.
Yeah.
And then we sell them, we parse them out to people that we deem worthy of consuming them. And that's not what I do. I mean, I do that, but I mean, we rolled through about like 70,000 pounds of curd last year.
Wow.
In one arm of the business, you know?
Yeah.
I mean,
and then there's all the restaurants there and
yeah,
everything else. I mean, that's an impressive amount of cheese. If I can ask really quickly, just because you, of all people, are very funny about this, and I feel like every cheesemonger does it, whether they're going to admit it or not, but you're talking about parsing out cheeses to certain people versus not others. How do you navigate that? I mean, it's and you don't have to talk specifics. It's not even about this particular job or this place and time, but I feel like every cheesemonger is kind of like, all right, I'm going to save this special thing for this person I really like.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
I mean, how would you get them to come back if you didn't do that?
Totally.
They're
so
not
going
to come
people
back to see me, man. I'm awful.
Do you have people that have followed you since that have been your customers since you first started,
I mean,
in New York City?
There are people who follow the cheese. You know, I definitely recognize people that I've sold cheese to over a span of decades. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But they follow the cheese, you know?
Yeah. That's true. If you were working at a place that sold shitty cheese, they probably wouldn't come to see
you.
Yeah. But
I mean, I'm just a set of hands, you know, and a loud mouth that puts it out to them, you know?
Totally. Totally. Totally.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you have regular customers, don't you?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
You're a cheesemonger.
I'm a cheesemonger, too.
You sell cheese with your hands.
I do.
I've seen it done.
I do.
By you.
Yep. Not as much as I, lately, not as much as I'd like to, actually.
Why not, man? Why not?
Because, you know, I had a kid and we have a wholesale business now and a little, you know, operation out in Red Hook, Brooklyn. And so being the owner of the business, too, it's tough. You end up kind of splitting your time. But to be honest with you, being behind that counter makes me happier than anything else.
Of course. Yeah. Well, your hands are in it.
And so how do you manage? Okay, so it makes us really happy. Otherwise, we wouldn't do it. But it also infuriates us sometimes.
Yeah.
How do you deal with that?
It's the shittiest job in the world. I mean, you know, these savages, they come up and, like, they ask you for free stuff. And you got to, like, cut them little bits of food. And then, you know, when you hand it out to them in your hand, you know, they're like, oh, like, just fucking eat it, you know? Just take it.
Don't judge it. Eat it. Tell me what you think. We'll go from there.
It's a tough job, you know? But... Yeah. It's, you never get tired of waking up in the morning to do it.
Yeah, that's true.
Because the stuff's that good. It's just that the stuff we sell is that good.
You're very humble. I think that in this era that we live in of like celebrity chefs and all kinds of, you know, nonsense on TV and on the internet and whatnot, you haven't mentioned yourself, I mean, once. You just are talking about the cheese.
Of course.
Which is, I feel like, a really useful and unique, you know, perspective for other cheesemongers to think about.
I'm nothing. You know, the goods I sell are everything. That's what it's about.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, I mean...
It's a beautiful sentiment. It's a beautiful sentiment, man. Actually, and it's perfectly timed. We have to take a little break, but when we come back, we're going to talk more with Greg, and then we're also going to get Veronica Pedraza on the line from Meadowood Farms, who's up at in Casanova, New York. They just had their lambing day celebration yesterday. So stick with us.
Sweet.
You're listening to Sumatra by Sherry Holmes on the heritageradionetwork.org.
The Academy Opus Cassius is the cheese industry's unique center for professional development, offering both practical and classroom training for cheese professionals ready to move their careers to the next level. When you come to learn at the Academy, we instill our love for cheese, our expertise, and our experience so that you can support artisanal producers, impeccably care for the fine cheeses you carry, and serve your customers with skill and enthusiasm. We integrate hands-on practice, formal instruction, and classroom discussion in all of our courses. The Academy's programs are offered at the Mons Fromagerie in the heart of France, where cheese undergoes affinage and cheeses are received, prepared, and shipped. Several Mons retail shops are nearby. The surrounding countryside is the home to producers whose excellent cheeses are cared for by the Mons team. The Mons cheese business has more than 50 years' experience caring for and teaching about cheese in France, a country known as the source of some of the world's greatest cheeses, deepest cheese tradition, and the highest level of technological research and rigor in cheese making and ripening. The Academy has been recognized by the American Cheese Society as the first approved education center for those preparing for the Certified Cheese Professional Exam. Enroll now for Essential Foundations for Cheese Professionals or Affinage, the Art and Science of Maturing Cheese. For more information, visit www.academy-mons.com. That's academy-mons.com. Certified Cheese Professional is a registered trademark of the American Cheese Society.
All right, and we're back on Cutting the Curd. This is the Heritage Radio Network. You can find us online at heritageradionetwork.org. We're broadcasting live from Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn. And today we have Greg Blaze, who is a very good friend of mine and cheesemonger for many years, talking about being a cheesemonger. And on the line with us now, we have Veronica Pedraza, who's up at Meadowood Farms in Casanova, New York, who is in the throes, I should say, of lambing. Veronica, are you with us?
Yeah, I'm here, Ann. Can you hear us good?
Hey, oh yeah, we can hear loud
Absolutely.
And clear.
Hey.
So how's
it? I'm with Fiona.
Hey, Fiona, how are you?
Hi, I'm doing well.
And Fiona,
she's really the one in the throes of lambing.
Yeah, you're just waiting for the milk to start flowing so you can make some cheese.
Exactly.
And Fiona, can tell me your last name again. I'm so sorry. I want to make sure we get it right for the radio here.
Tarar.
Fiona Tarar. Okay, fantastic. So what's going on up at the farm? I feel like this is the time of year when we all in the city get excited because the weather starts to get nice and we can start to, you know, be outside more, ride our bikes around, eat brunch and, you know, hang out on a Sunday morning. But what does it mean for you guys up at the farm?
We've been pretty busy for the last month and a half. We started lambing probably about March 6th, and we have a total of about 130 sheep And we did two groups, two different breeding groups, and the first group started lambing, and we had 175 lambs in a period of 21 days.
Wow.
That's a lot of kids.
It was just total madness for about 3 weeks, and we had mostly triplets, a lot of twins, and then we had four sets of quads.
Wow. And how did everybody do? Was it generally an easy season for you guys, or did you encounter some bumps?
It was actually pretty trouble-free. You know, we do have occasional issues where we have to assist with the birth, but for the most part, they do it themselves and, you know, take care of their babies, and it goes well. And
how do you guys deal? Because, you know, on a dairy farm, this is a question that I get asked a lot. People are always very concerned then about, you know, the weaning process. They're like, oh, when do the babies leave the moms? And I say, you know, it's really on a farm-to-farm basis. So how do you guys deal with, you know, raising the lambs for the first couple weeks and then transitioning to cheese making?
We actually leave our lambs on for 30 days. We let them nurse. We don't take them off right away. I mean, there are some sheep dairies that take them off right away. Some people leave the lambs on for a few weeks, but we do it for 30 days, and it seems to work out really well for us. The lambs grow really well, and we're able to get them to a good, healthy weight. We want them to be about 30 pounds before we wean them and start milking the mothers.
Yeah. Greg's got a question for you.
How many animals do you have from time to time? Like, how many animals do you manage and on your farm?
We have a total of 130 ewes, and we have probably about 10 rams on the farm. And then
the
right
studs.
Now we
so you're like
have
10 studs who like impregnate all those gals.
Yeah.
Lucky.
That's a good
and
ratio.
We generally manage around 200 lambs throughout the grazing season.
Man.
Wow.
We have cattle as well. Yeah, we have a herd of Belted Galloway cattle.
How many cows you got?
They're around 50 right now with all the cows, heifers, and steers and calves from last year.
Can I ask you, like, how big is your farm? How large of an area do they get to roam around in and eat?
We have about 225 acres. It's primarily pasture.
Yeah.
And
this time of year, it's still pretty wet.
Yeah.
We generally get them out on pasture about May 1st.
Cool.
And I guess, yeah, I kind of jumped right into the lambing and the actual happenings on the farm. But can you give us a little rundown of Meadowood Farms? I think we might have even done this once before on the radio, but just give our listeners a little picture of what the farm is like and how you moved from just the cattle into the sheep dairying. just a quick story. No, I'm just kidding.
There's nothing to say there.
Yeah.
the farm is actually owned by two men who have a they have a house on the property, and they wanted all the surrounding property to continue to be a working farm. And so when they purchased it, they started out with cattle, basically just, you know, to keep the grass mown. And they chose Belted Galloways because they're a really beautiful heritage breed, and they do really well in this climate. And then they ended up hooking up with a woman who had a sheep dairy in the area, and she was actually milking sheep and selling the milk to Old Chatham at the time. And she moved her flock over here, and that's how the sheep dairy got started.
She would only take care of the cattle if she could bring some sheep over.
Yeah.
Why is that? Why?
She held the sheep, she held ransom.
Yeah, why was she holding them, hostage like that?
I guess some people just really love sheep, you know? I guess.
Yeah.
That's so funny.
I'm definitely a sheep lover.
Why?
And,
why is that?
My partner Seth manages the cattle.
Why do you love the sheep?
They're just they're small. They're easier to deal with than cattle. You know, cattle are just big and intimidating. And
like sort of lunky and roaming around. But
yeah, milk makes the most delicious cheese.
Yes.
Their milk makes the most delicious cheese.
Yeah.
So how do you feel
that's
about that?
That's what I was getting at. Like, I mean, the sheep's milk is like the best stuff in the world.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's... Do you make ice cream out of the sheep's milk? Because I've had sheep's milk ice cream. That's possibly one of the best things ever put in my mouth.
I think what Greg is asking is if you can buy sheep's milk and make someone make ice cream with it in Italy.
Kind of. Maybe I am asking that. Yes.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Doing that?
No, she's in Idaho.
Oh, Idaho.
Yeah.
Oh man.
She's making sheep's milk ice cream.
So, tell us more about the cheese making. When is that getting started for you guys, and what kind of cheeses are you going to be making this year?
Well, hopefully we'll start making cheese. We should start milking sometime this week, and cheese making will subsequently follow. We're going to make Ledyard, Rippleton, and Lorenzo. And I'm going to play around with a new cheese called Strawbridge.
What's that all about?
I
don't, you know, I'm trolling to get new cheese from you.
Oh, okay.
Not really.
Cool, I like this conversation. It's, I think, going to be sort of inspired by like a Montenegro, but with sheep's milk.
Sure.
That'll be so good.
Smoking in the radio station.
And actually, wait, I have another question, because we were talking about why you like sheep, and you were talking about the, you know, the size and the kind of, you know, demeanor of the animals. It seems to me more common that women like working with sheep and goats and men like working with cows better. Do you guys think that's true, or am I making that up? I feel like the size issue might have something to do with
the size of the animal.
Yeah, I don't know. Do you guys, am I totally just blowing smoke, or is that,
but all aren't all the cows gals, I mean,
oh yeah, but I mean in terms of like women cheesemakers prefer working with sheep and goats maybe versus cows.
I think it has to do with working hard versus working smart. And like work hard.
You like to work hard, you said?
I wish I knew the difference.
So you guys had your first ever Lambing Day festival yesterday, right?
It wasn't the first one. We've been doing it for several years now.
Oh, well, my apologies. This was the first one that I knew about because Veronica is working with you guys now. So can you? So what happens at Lambing Day, and how can people find out about it, you know, if they want to come up next year?
We basically open the farm up to the public for 4 hours. The event went from noon to four yesterday. And we really do it as a community event to you know, help the public understand what we're doing here and why we're doing it, and it's an opportunity for people to come see how we manage the animals and how we take care of them, and to learn about all the products that we make. And it's because normally we're not open to the public. We basically just sell our products, you know, from farmers market and wholesaling.
That's the public, though.
I mean, there's just three of us on the farm, so it's really difficult to manage visitors and
can't come up and be like, hey, yeah, can you show me around? You're like,
we want to see those animals getting milked, man. Yeah. Can we get like 50 people packed in this room? So
totally. Well, I think, you know, that is, you know, especially in light of all this, you know, I don't know when exactly I heard about it in the news, but there's been some news recently about, you know, cameras being allowed in different animal processing facilities, whether it's slaughterhouses or dairies or whatever. And so, yeah, I think the idea of letting, you know, of not just allowing, but inviting the public in to see how you do your thing is just awesome, because people love to see it.
Are you comfortable with that? Do you mind that people know what you're up to?
I'm fine with it. I'm very proud of, you know, what I do and how we take care of the animals, and I want people to
know, right? Yeah. Like, why do you do it? Like, why do you do it? Why do you do it?
Why do I do it?
Yeah.
Well, I was a vegetarian for 12 years.
Oh, that's horrible.
And it was because, you know, I was opposed to industrial agriculture and the way animals were raised.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
And I came to the realization that I could make more of a difference by actually farming, raising livestock, and raising my own food, and educating people about how it can be done well.
Yeah, and when you work with the animals, do you feel that? Like, do you know you're on the right path?
Yes, yeah, I that's feel cool. That. And then the other thing,
I'm being serious. I'm a little hungover, but I'm nonetheless serious.
These are earnest questions.
Yeah, absolutely.
After 12 years of being a vegetarian, I ate some bacon, and then I, you know.
Well, bacon will turn anybody around, man.
I know. Actually, Fleischer's, that butcher shop up in Kingston, they have a T-shirt that says "Bacon, the Gateway Meat" on it.
Yes.
Because they were vegetarians too, and then they ended up opening a butcher shop. You know.
Yeah.
So that's fantastic. So you guys are really expanding your operations this year. Greg and I, as cheese sellers and cheesemongers, are really excited about that because we'll have more of your cheese to sell.
Can we have your cheese?
Yeah, we're gonna
please.
130. We milked 84 last year, so we're gonna.
Can I ask you a question? Based like people that I sell cheese to, they don't understand. The cycle of giving milk, the cycle that animals give milk on. They don't understand why sheep's milk cheese is available in a certain way at a certain time of year. You know, they don't get that, like...
We got to send them up to lambing day.
Yeah.
And then they're going to get it.
They're like, this is when the milk is coming out, you know?
Yep.
And then they don't get that there's like 2 or 3 or 4 months between the time that you guys take the milk and the cheese is made, and the cheese is really, really great. They're like, why is the sheep's milk cheese so good at the end of the summer? I'm like, well, because shit, they gave all the milk in the spring, and then that's when the cheese comes out. Am I wrong to say that?
I feel like Italy is uniquely in the position to create like a little exhibit where you could like go around and like pick up headphones and like listen to you talking.
Dragging sheep and goats into Italy. That's all right. But I was told by one of my friends that they would like eat the marble. They're like, if you bring goats in here, they'll eat the floor.
Wait, but that's a lie, right? Because goats, Veronica, I don't know, and Fiona, goats are gourmands in my mind. They really are picky. I mean, they eat a wide variety.
They're scrappers, man.
Yes.
They eat cars. They eat cars? Oh, wow. Okay, never mind.
They're scrappers, man. They process anything, you know? Tin cans.
The sheep do that.
Sheep are like kind of regal. They produce that good buttery milk only because they are picky in what they eat, right?
Yes, they're very careful about what they eat.
Yeah. Well, we're definitely looking forward to some cheeses. Actually, coming up here in the middle of May, Greg, we're going to get the first Ledyards from Meadowood. And then in June, we're going to see the Rippleton come back. So,
and of course, you will sell me these apples.
Oh, right? Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. For sure. Oh, man. Well, thank you guys so much. Actually, before we sign off, how can people, do you guys have a website or, you know, a Facebook page or something where people can check in and learn about the farm, what you guys have been doing?
We do have a website. It's meadowoodfarms.com, but I highly recommend going to our Facebook page. I'm able to update that a lot more frequently, and there are a lot of cute lamb pictures on there.
And there's an awesome, awesome YouTube video.
Oh, yeah. I made a YouTube video about lambing day.
Oh, awesome. All right. Well, we'll definitely post that link here.
You're listening to Cutting the Curd.
All right. Well, thank you guys.
Hosted by Ann Saxelby. You're listening to Cutting the Curd. Hosted by Ann Saxelby.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hey everybody, I'm Nick Latham.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.